This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. We do have some Rangers optimism for a day. I don't know. Let me try that again. I'm excited the Rangers won. Whether or not that actually leads to optimism, I don't know about all.
We are back, baby. We are back in this thing.
Watch Don't let us get hot.
Mike's right. Do not let us get hot. Celebrate this thing.
Or else what? The Rangers could win 8 in a row and still be really far back.
Wow. Not as far.
Dude.
I mean, if Houston and Seattle go 8-0 both, then we would stay the same.
This fire was just getting started. Kevin, I didn't say it was a burning inferno. I was just saying it's just getting started.
Wait, here
you
walk in with a wet rag. When we take down the 6-foot niner.
Paul Skeens?
No, Ober.
Ober.
He's 6'9".
Bailey Ober.
We're facing a 6-niner.
Nice.
Never mind. Don't ask that question.
Hold on. Are you not... Did that win last night not excite you? Did that not... Was that not fun to watch?
No, did you not believe down 7-4?
No, I didn't. And I think people who said they did might be lying.
They scored 9 runs.
Tell me.
The MVP race is on.
No. Be honest. Down 7-4, you thought the Rangers were going to win.
If you're saying that I thought that...
No, question mark. Did you think the Rangers were going to win? That is nicely done. I think that answers my question. But guess what? We can go to cut number 2 because this is what happened, and maybe the momentum is starting.
Zach Kelly is in to pitch here for Boston. Ezekiel Duran, the ghost runner at second. First pitch swinging. Jonah Heim blast one deep out into right field. It is over the wall. Abreu tried to make a leaping grab in front of the Boston bullpen, but he couldn't bring it back. Jonah Heim with a 2-run home run. Rangers on top here, 9-7.
That was the moment.
Now what?
Okay.
After the moment.
Okay, wait, what?
When the Wyatt Langford one was the moment.
Okay, so the Wyatt Langford was the moment, and this was the moment after the moment.
Yeah, because then that showed you it wasn't just Wyatt. It was contagious. That's contagious.
I hope you're right.
That's a reality.
Yes.
And I think when Adolis went
the
up there and
the best way to get contagious is to all get on a plane together.
That's how I got it a while back. My buddy was on a plane, and then he...
What is it exactly?
Yeah, what did you get?
All the guys after that happened all got on the plane together, and they all got hitting contagious.
There you go. Actually, I think that's in the dugout where it happens. Just my thoughts, but maybe so.
More open air in the dugout.
Yeah, but Kevin, I think it's contagious, man. You see one dude go after it, he gets his, and he's like, all right. But I really still think it starts with Adolis. And him having the kind of game he had last night, I think, was a big factor.
All right.
I just need him to do it again for the rest of the season.
Then you won't care for my first question in storylines to watch for the rest of the major league season. Do you think a storyline to watch is, will the Rangers have a massive releases this month?
50-50.
Not if they win the next one.
Okay.
And then the next one.
So hold on. No, I really like the idea that if they win tonight, they're like, we're good.
Kevin, all right. I know I've told you.
That happened in the White Sox series.
I've told you about Shorzy. That's one of my favorite shows. I love Shorzy. It's an absolute blast. The beginning of the show is basically they're playing whale-ass hockey, all right? It's minor league hockey, and they're going to fold the team.
Oh.
And Shorzy's like, don't do it. Please, we will never lose again. That's what he tells them. And she's like, you can't ever lose again. And he's like, just let me collect my team. And I think that's what needs to happen. Boach needs to walk in there with a Ray Davis cutout, all right, and just have and say, all right, guys, every time y'all win a game, we remove a piece of Ray Davis's suit. And then the team rallies together, never loses another game, and just keeps going. Then why would you sell? Why would you say, hey, we're releasing these players? Let's make another run at this championship. I like that idea more than I like Ray Davis is going to piece off every one of these players.
I didn't say the storylines you like. I said the storylines to watch that might define the regular season.
Why would I watch something I don't like?
I think if they are...
Oh, please, because you're a sports fan. You watch things you don't like all the time.
If they are 10 or more games back on August 28th, I would lean towards 70% that they release or put on waivers. So yeah. I'm going to make this clear. You don't just ultimately release them. What you do is you put them on waivers. Yeah. If anybody claims them, they put got the order. Them. But if they're, I know this, I'm going to give two different numbers here. If they are 7 games out of the division, I think they'll hold on to Andrew Heaney and Evaldi and a couple other guys that they're, contracts are up at the end of the year, and the likelihood of the Rangers financially being able to compete in the marketplace to get them to come back isn't very high, then I think they will keep them if they're 7 or less. I think if it's 10 or more, they will put 2 to 4 guys on waivers to save money for the rest of this season.
Okay.
But and there's that buffer of 8 or 9 that I don't know what they'll do.
Now, it could be worse, Corey. Can the Chicago White Sox make history? The worst winning percentage in the history of baseball is 242. Or excuse me, 242 would mark the worst winning percentage since 1916. The White Sox would need to finish 39-123. Right now they're 29-93. Do you think the White Sox can do it?
No.
And go 10-30 down the stretch.
100%. Oh, you're saying that's good? That would.
No, that would set the record.
Yeah, they're going to set the record.
If they don't go better than 10-30.
I think they're going to set the record. That is, their talent on that team is so low right now. I just don't know how they figure it out. Heck, Eloy Jimenez wasn't even having a good year for them, and he's not even on the team anymore.
Sure.
So, like, I just look at it and go, I don't know how they beat the Yankees on that day they did. But all they have to do is do that 11 more times, and they tie the record.
Yes, I guess they'll tie the record then.
Has Grady Sizemore been like the interim manager for every team in baseball? I feel like he's, if I'm wrong,
he's only 40 or 42 years old.
I feel like he rolled through our organization at one point, right? Am I wrong about that?
I think you're wrong about that.
Okay.
Are you thinking Grady Little?
That's
who's like 80 years old?
Yeah.
So.
Now, do you give the White Sox any credit for the fact that they're dropping their season ticket prices by an average of 10% for
who's
next
doing
year?
This?
The White Sox. They're like, because somebody asked about the Rangers. The Rangers are not doing that I'm aware of. But the White Sox, 10% across the board, because they're like, we're terrible.
I don't think that's going to help at all.
Okay.
Let's just say you're a diehard. Let's just take it to the Rangers.
Sure.
But the Rangers win 38 games, and you know they're not spending any money to make it better.
Yeah.
The White Sox, what I'm saying is, but you just have to put yourself in Rangers shoes if you're a Rangers fan. Like, 10% doesn't matter. Honestly, it'd have to be, if I was diehard, it'd have to be close to 50%.
Okay.
To be like, yeah, I'm going to go watch us go 20-60 next year.
Yeah. All right. Who is going to win the AL East? Obviously, the Yankees and the Orioles have gone back and forth. The Yankees are up by half a game right now. Are you invested in the AL East race? And if so, who do you think is going to win it?
I'm going to lean towards Baltimore. I know that right now Grayson Rodriguez is on the injured list, and they think he's going to just miss 2, possibly 3 starts.
Yep.
But I look at the Yankees, and I get it. They have 2 of the best hitters in the game, and maybe the best 1-2 combination that we've seen in a very long time. Maybe Griffey and A-Rod, right before Griffey left to go to Cincinnati, and then obviously A-Rod the next year, following year, ended up going to Texas. But I don't love the New York Yankees starting pitchers. And I'm not like super in love with Baltimore, but I think they have more.
Okay.
So I'm going to lean towards Baltimore holds on. It's going to be a great, because man, you get a bye or you're in a 4-5 matchup against who we'll see tonight here, Minnesota.
Is this the last dance for the Houston Astros?
No.
Oh.
I thought it was, but here's why. I thought Texas was going to take it over. I really did. I thought this is like the perfect timing for the Rangers. Can you believe this? And you didn't win the division last year, but you beat them in the playoffs. You have that momentum. You have Young, Carter, Langford. And then what are we going to spend? We just won the World Series. And it just seems like the Rangers maybe aren't prepared. And there's nothing they can do about it. Obviously, I work for the Rangers and Bally's and here. But the TV situation seems like it's put a stop to the building off of a championship team and building even more. So the Rangers aren't going to do it. As in, the Rangers aren't going to try to overtake this division for the next 5 years. They're going to hope, but they're not going to do everything possible to do it. They're going to hope that Jack Leiter and those guys develop. Seattle just is Seattle.
Yeah.
They just can't figure out. The last time they won the division, Ichiro was a rookie. Like, that's the last time they won the division. Ichiro was a rookie in baseball from Japan. So I look at it and go, Houston's still going to have Altuve and Alvarez. And at this point, I think 85 to 87 games is going to win the division again next year.
I think Mike's completely right that they win that division. I don't look at them as competitor in playoff time, like a real competitor.
I'm with you too.
Okay.
Compared to the other teams. That's just kind of where I'm right there with you. Like, they'll continue to be good in this division because the Rangers haven't shown they can consistently do.
Here's where they could get lucky in the playoffs. We just talked about Baltimore and New York, 1-4 seed. Well, the 1 seed plays the 4-5 matchup. It's not like where it's like, well, if the 6 seed upsets, then Baltimore gets the 6 seed. So Baltimore and New York are going to have to play each other in the divisional round, most likely. That's your divisional round, the two best teams in the divisional round. That means Houston, if they win their division, they will take on, right now would be Kansas City. They beat Kansas City, and then they're taking on Cleveland. Cleveland doesn't have much pitching either. They're having a tremendous year, but you could see Houston back in the ALCS, even though I'm with you, Corey. Mm-hmm. Maybe in a way not deserving, because it should be Baltimore and New York in that situation.
I know he's looked human in his last couple of starts, but are you invested in, could Paul Skenes still win the NL Cy Young? And do you think he can?
I don't think they're going to allow him to pitch enough innings.
Do you think they're
going to
shut him down?
Because he didn't get called up till early May, so he misses a whole month of April, and now I think in September they are going to limit his starts and limit his innings. I don't think they're going to shut him down, but now that they've lost 10 in a row,
it's something like
that.
I think they've
lost 10 in a row.
That is correct.
Now they are not in the playoff picture anymore, so you don't have to have the tough decision like Steven Strasburg in 2012-ish or so, where you're like, hey, we could make the playoffs, we could make a run, and the only way to do it is Skenes pitches us there.
Yeah.
Well, now that you're not in that situation, it took the pressure off of them to go, hey, maybe the last 2 weeks of the season, we're like, hey, you did great rookie year, rookie of the year, but we're not pushing you anymore.
It's good. I think he does what Randy Johnson says and says, you don't tell me how to pitch.
Okay, that would be interesting because depending on where you look, he's third or fourth in the NL Cy Young betting odds. Chris Sale leads the way, then Zach Wheeler. I think those are the agreed upon 1 and 2. And then Skenes and Hunter Green are kind of in the mix together. But he has been super fun to watch this year. And then I just saw this come out, and I know we talked about the value of the Rangers farm system, but MLB.com re-ranked the farm systems, and they have got the Rangers not at 28, but at 26. And midseason rank for 2022, 6. 2023 preseason rank, 7. Midseason rank that season, 10. Preseason rank this season, 7. Obviously, you've graduated the two key prospects, and now the Rangers have tumbled down to 26. And this division has horrible farm systems because the Angels are 29th and the Astros are 30th.
That's the thing about this division. Now, Seattle, we mentioned, had 6 on the top 100 list yesterday. So maybe Seattle is figuring it out, and I need to give them more credit. But this, for the next 5 years, is a wide-open division and will probably be the worst division in all of baseball for the next 5 years.
Seattle's number 9, by the way. Their climb over the last couple of years, 24, 24, 19, 18, and now they're up to number 9. And as you said, they have 6 prospects in the top 100. So maybe it could be turning around for them.
Yeah.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, best case and worst case scenarios for the Cowboys record this season. 877-881-1053. All right. Well, you can still text in or hit us up on the Twitch or YouTube if you don't say 17-0. Corey will give you a big giant thumbs down. But best case and worst case scenarios for the Cowboys record this year, next on The Fan.
Glove with a play fake, boots back to
wide
his left,
open.
Throws back down the right side. Musgraves all alone at the 15, down the sideline, to the pylon. Touchdown, Green Bay.
KNC Masterpiece back here on 105.3 The Fan. What do you think is the best case and worst case scenario for the Cowboys record this season? Now, I did see someone text in and say, best case is 17-0, worst case is 0-17.
True. Technically fair. Correct.
From a realistic perspective, what do you think is the best case and worst case scenario for this team?
Best case, 13-4.
Okay.
I don't think they're going to reach their best case.
Sure.
But that would be wow. Because that would probably give you a great chance to be the one seed.
But you're still feeling nervous going into the playoffs.
100%. Because right? I'm just going to assume, yeah. I hate saying this, but I'm going to assume they play their worst football of the year in that game. Whenever they get to play their playoff game, my assumption is, we have not seen this Dallas Cowboys team play. We're okay. going to watch a team. We're going to be very confused on how bad they are in that playoff game, even if they go 13-4. Hope I'm wrong. But worst case is 7-10. Okay. I think they can still win with okay. Cooper Rush, because worst case scenario is Dak gets hurt early on in the season and can't play. Because I think that would destroy your season of making the playoffs. There's other guys, too, that I think would destroy it, too, but he's the most important. But I would go, you know what, with Cooper Rush, I saw him go 4-1 a few years ago, and I'm not saying he would go 4-1, but I think that in 17 games, if Cooper Rush was your quarterback, I think you'd go, I guess I would move it maybe down to 6-11, but I still think they could go 7-10.
I gotcha.
Well, Mike did take my best case.
Ooh.
13-4. And I kind of, part of me wants to go 12-5 just because they've done that so consistently. And to actually achieve that this year with what I think is a lesser roster would be a very good thing.
Okay, let me ask you a quick question.
They got a tough schedule.
That is true. When y'all do best case, worst case, do you go down and you're like, this is a loss, this is a loss? Or do you look at like clumps and you're like, I don't know which one, but they'll lose that Philly or Houston
probably clumps,
game.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
all right, all right.
Because they could win one that I don't expect them to,
sure,
but they'll lose the one that I don't expect them to also.
Okay.
So, yeah, somewhere in there. But yeah, man, a 13-4 season is pretty exceptional. And at the same time, it's Mike McCarthy somehow found a way to keep those guys locked in and not getting burnt out. Throughout the difficult part of the schedule, which, as we know, is the meat of the schedule, the real meat of it.
Mm.
The worst case scenario is I got them at 6-11.
Okay,
and that is, here's worst case scenario: you're going along pretty well, and then Dak gets hurt, or you're going along pretty well, you're not starting off very well, and then the team starts to fall apart. And you're looking at, hey, man, Mike McCarthy, his contract's running out. Dak Prescott, he didn't get his contract done. He's looking elsewhere now. The defense is like, man, I don't even know. So that's, if the locker room becomes fractured, this team will not be. You've seen it before, man.
No, you're right. But I was going to ask this question. For reasonable best case scenario, is there any part of you, I don't want anybody to get hurt, but is there any part of you that thinks 6-11 could be a best case scenario? Because then if the front office is telling the truth, you move on from your quarterback, you move on from your head coach, you'll have a better draft pick, not a top of the round draft pick.
Would you
have
top 10?
You could.
That's right around. Yeah. I'd say anywhere between 7-12.
Yeah. And you really have to, or you would think, you really have to reboot it. Now, that is also taking assumptions that the front office is like, you know, telling the truth about some of these things. But is there any part of you that thinks 6-11 could be a best case? Because then you're like, now you have to try again and reboot the thing.
In a way, yes, because I think most likely they're going to go 10-7 and make the playoffs and lose in the first round.
I can see that.
And now you have the decision on Dak and McCarthy have made the playoffs 4 years in a row.
Yep.
Yes, there's no playoff success, but that's tough for the Jones family to go away from. You're competitive, you're making the playoffs. If you get in, you have a chance. And I don't think they go away from it. So I think that they would do the thing that I think Cowboy fans would maybe dislike the most, and that would be giving McCarthy a 2-year extension and Dak a 3-year, $180 million contract and with all the no trade clauses, everything that you would ever want in a contract.
And that you're right when you say that you don't think Cowboys fans want that. The part of the question, Kevin, am I going into the season wanting that best case scenario?
Okay.
Because if so, and all those things happen, then yeah, that's a best case scenario for me. Right now, I'll be honest, I haven't been like railing against Dak for a long time, but I'm kind of tired of where this team falls short.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of like, okay, can we find a new piece to go forward with? So that's where I am. And I'm not begging for a season where we're bad, because I don't want to come in here every week, Kevin, and have to talk about a bad football team every week.
Can I tell you something? I'm really intrigued by your question, because I would root for a bad season as a one-off if I thought it was a means to actually get the ends done. But I don't necessarily think that. You know, like I said, if the Cowboys go 6-11, they theoretically should do X, Y, and Z. But I don't necessarily think they will. If you told me...
Because you don't think that they'll move on from Dak because of the money?
Yes, kind of. And so if you told me it's going to be a crap season, but then you're going to, you know, sweep everything out, you're going to rebuild, and I'd be like, okay, this what we're doing isn't working. Let's try something new. I could get my head around that, but I don't think they will. So I feel like you have no choice but to root for, hey, maybe this time it works out, even though the last 28, 29 years tell you it probably will not.
I mean, more than anything, I want to root for Dak Prescott and the Cowboys winning. Like, more than anything, I want that part of it. I will say this, though. Listening to Sean this morning, he kind of laid it out for the first time. I think that I've heard somebody on our station lay it out. Is how does Jerry and Steven win? How do Jerry and Steven win with this Dak negotiation?
Yeah.
When not signing him? And that is, if you don't get as far as you want, you don't get it to an NFC championship game, or you don't get a playoff win, and then he wins after he leaves, goes somewhere else, wins a couple of playoff games, but never really gets over the hump, never really gets there. That was the best explanation, is that's what Jerry and Steven are really trying to decide. Kind of, aside from the money, is was that worth it? That we decided he wasn't going to be the one to take us there, and so we bit the $40 million on the dead money and said we just have to live with that.
So ESPN put out kind of their idea for every single team's floor and ceiling, and if you're curious about other teams, I'm sure we could run through that as well. For the Cowboys, they said ceiling 13-4, floor 8-9. And kind of going through some of these texts, some of the stuff on the YouTube and the Twitch from the 817, just feed them saucy nugs all season and they'll go 14-3. From the 817, best case scenario 13-4, worst case scenario 7-10. It depends on how McCarthy is going to manage in the fourth quarter and in the playoffs. From the 325, 12-5 and 6-11 as best and worst case scenario. And like a lot of people, they have it kind of meeting in the middle at 9-8. I'm sure that 7-10, 8-9, 9-8, and 10-7 are popular choices for the Dallas Cowboys record this year.
I just don't feel like they're going to be a middling team, Kevin.
Okay.
I feel like, and I think I created this word. I don't think they're going to be one of those teams that, I think it's going to be extreme on either side. I think it's going to be either a really good regular season or a really poor regular season. I don't feel like it's a team that's going to land in the middle just because of the other factors that are involved.
I hope you're right. This team feels like a kind of a 10-7 to me, losing the first round on the road sort of team, but I hope you're right.
And that's not enough to change anything.
To you and to me.
You think it is to Jerry?
Oh, you said it's not enough to change anything?
Yeah.
I think that's absolutely enough to change something.
10-7 and lose the playoffs?
Yes, because I know.
But what to change what? To change the coach?
And the quarterback. Although
I don't think it's enough to change the quarterback.
And I would argue that his contract is why they're not going to change that, because they painted themselves into a corner, because they're like, oh, yeah, we'll figure it out with Dak. And now that it's here, they're like, oh, crap. He really does want to get paid, and we're kind of up against it in terms of if he walks away. I don't know. You might be right, because then I know they'll trot out the, do you know in the last 4 years, we have had 46 wins.
You know how difficult it is to find a good quarterback, let alone a great quarterback in this thing?
And I'm not even counting the one against Tampa in the playoffs.
Yes, exactly.
Where we went on the road in the playoffs and beat Tom Brady. Holy cow.
Did you not see how good Dak was against Tom Brady in that game?
Now, a lot of the over-unders for the Cowboys have the win line set at about 9.5.
Okay.
Would you go over on that? I would go over on that.
I've seen 10.5 a lot of places, and I was already going over on that.
Oh,
so
okay.
So yes, I'm going over 9.5.
So would you go over at 9.5?
Yeah.
Okay.
10.5, I would probably, if it's 50-50, if the odds are, because I know it's an over-under, but it's not even money on
it. So we'll get to 10.5. That is not an even proposition anymore, but 9.5 is closer.
I would lean, I'm leaning at 10 wins, so if your number's 9.5, I will go over. If it's 10.5, I will go under.
So the Fanatics book had it at 10.5 for the Cowboys. So much money has come in on the under, 93%. That now the under is down to minus 200, which means if you take the under, you have to bet twice as much as you're hoping to win.
I want to do that.
No. Well, especially because you're betting under. Like, obviously, it's more fun to bet the over if it's a team that you like.
Yes.
So that's probably a tough sell. And from the 901, I'm just going to give a couple more of these. Best case scenario, 9-8. Worst case scenario, 6-11. From the 318, the locker room could be ultra toxic. That's why their best case, worst case scenario, 13-4 to 4-13. That is a, I would be willing to argue very much that they will land somewhere within that mix.
It could get that way. That's the thing about when you have your head coach and your quarterback on, this is it.
Yeah.
Do or don't. Boy, if it starts off 2-3, and I know that's still a lot of football left, it could get toxic on how much commitment do I make to this organization. I hate saying that. I think Dak's a good dude, but
yeah, I think we all do.
But you also have to somewhat protect yourself in that situation. If it seems like you don't have a running game and you're having to pass the ball 45 times and you're getting hit a lot, well, sometimes you do have to start making a few business decisions in that situation.
Now, I know we got Mike Likes It coming up in just a minute, but are you prepared for a different sports journey for just a minute?
Sure.
Let's go to cut number 9 and talk about an amazing auction going on.
Here's the pitch by Downing. Swinging. There's a drive into left center field. That ball is going to be out of here. It's gone. It's 7-15. There's a new home run champion of all time, and it's Henry Aaron.
So they weren't talking about Brian Downing.
They were not talking about Brian Downing. So obviously one of the most famous scenes, I would argue, in the history of sports, but certainly one of the more famous scenes in the
history. They let two random guys run the bases with them.
Let it happen, but it did happen.
At a terrifying time when, if I was Hank Aaron, I would be concerned that those people are coming out to stab me. Like, you've heard all about the awful stories of racism leading up to Hank Aaron trying to break this record. But the interesting thing about this is there was a Braves employee who instructed his staff to grab everything related to the record-breaking home run. The bat, the hat, the jersey, pants, shoes, socks, belt, everything. So Aaron gave the jersey, bat, and ball to the Hall of Fame. The jersey's in Cooperstown. The bat and ball are at the Braves Park. But the Braves also grabbed all four of the bases from the field. And they've just been kind of like in a box for decades and decades and decades. And now there is an auction going at Heritage that is selling all of them. So home plate, first, second, third. I'm sure you've seen a baseball game before. You have an idea how it goes. I probably
keep
wasted
going.
Probably no, wasted yeah, yeah. time on that. Then you go home. Probably wasted people's time on that. But it is the entire set of four bases that Hank Aaron ran when he broke the record. I realize it's different than maybe the bat or the jersey or whatever, but this still seems like a really neat auction.
It's super cool. I mean, it'd be something that if I was a multimillionaire and a collector of memorabilia, that this would be something that I would want. And then the thing is I have all three, but if I wanted to, I could a couple years from now go, hey, I'll sell third base.
Yeah.
I'll sell second base. I'll have first base. So now somebody else who missed out because this was a big collection, I think I can make money. Like, what if you feel like, I don't know how much this, does it have an estimation on?
Yes. What do you think the estimation is?
I'm going to be low, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say $300,000.
I was going to say $400,000.
You are going to be shocked then because
$3 million?
I thought this was way low. $100,000.
For all
of them.
Okay, and there are. Wow, I thought it was going to be too conservative.
Yeah, for sure. There are spike marks on home plate, by the way. Like, I'm not saying that I can guarantee you this is where Hank Aaron stepped and put his foot into history, but.
Here's my dream. Like, my mind is in this dream world, Kevin, of. I have this room that's big enough to have a small baseball field in it. All right. Like it's got one of those, you know, I have a Fenway Park wall over on one side. And then I walk in and I'm like, oh, yeah, by the way, all the bases are from Hank Aaron's home run trot. Now, Mike just said, oh, I could sell third base. Would you, you're OCD. Would your mind be like, I have to have all the bases from the same thing? Or if you had a different base from different moments in time, would you be cool with that? Like second bases from this moment.
No. I need one.
You don't have to frame it either, by the way.
I need none,
on the
one or all of them. All right. I can have none of them.
Okay.
I can have one of them or you I can have all of them. I cannot have two or three of them.
But you could have all the bases being different. You just have them laid out like this third base here is from that. Second is from this.
No.
First is from that. Wow.
I can't do that. I can't do that either. I don't know why my brain works the way it does. There's still 8 days left in this auction. And
let's do it.
And it's at 44,000.
We'll split it.
That's at 44,000.
I'm going to bid 50,000.
I will split that bid with
Here's
you.
The deal. I remember I was going to do this and you have to get a lot of clearance from Heritage or
these auction houses.
I can't remember what it was. I was like, I'm not going to win if I bid 50,000, but it'll be fun to.
Sure.
But they don't allow, you have to go through a lot of.
Which is probably
stuff,
for the best.
Because they're
right?
just not going to allow me.
I'm going to bid $800,000.
Yeah, because then they're like, you won. And you're like,
here's
hey,
the deal.
I need this. I'm going to now the scary commercial. You want to go into Mike Likes It based off of this?
Let's go. Let's go to Mike Likes It.
All right. One of the most scary commercials that are going on right now. And I think you are, and I, Kevin, have gone through this recently. They're like, hey, do you have a kid that's leaving for college?
Yeah.
Well, now you can turn their room into a rent-a-room. In our world today, do I want to take a room that is next to my other kids' rooms, near my room, in my wife's room, and just go like, hey, guess what? Randomly turned it into a rent-a-room to make money to people that I'm not going to be able to.
Yeah.
Adrian's father-in-law or Adrian's dad did that back in the day. And I'm like, what?
Isn't that scary?
Somebody was living with the family. And I was like, that is wild to me.
Like, I understand if it's a friend, family member, they need, you know, whatever. I get that. You're just going to throw it up on whatever the VRBO website is and just be like, anybody want to rent a room for a few nights in our house?
Yeah. I'm with you because I think that could be a great way to make money or help somebody out. But I also see how you end up on the news and you're like, well, that was stupid.
Yeah.
Why did that person?
Well, I followed the commercial.
Yes.
Okay. So now we get to the other Mike Likes It. Corey, thank you. You pulled some of this audio. We're going to have to kind of stop it because it's
I think we can actually let this run to be completely honest.
Okay. Let's let it run. This is at their prime. Greg Maddux and Barry Bonds, literally, arguably, the greatest pitcher of all time versus the greatest hitter of all time. They both have iPads. They are both, you know, one's in San Francisco. One is, I don't know where Greg Maddux lives in the offseason or where he lives now. But they are just going over this, and they give you the genius of their brains working on how it works to hit and pitch.
Yeah, this is an at-bat between the two of them.
And here comes Barry Bonds.
So, I mean, you know, first inning, it's kind of too early to pitch around somebody, so you're going to try to get him out.
Well, Bonds chased that first pitch.
Ooh, jam fastball. What was that, 92?
Pretty good cutter that beat him. I'm feeling okay about throwing that pitch.
So he's going to try to float a changeup or some of that little floater away. Because he thinks I'm going to speed up because they jammed me.
The cutter beat him, so I thought he would speed up. I threw a changeup, and he spit on
it. Yeah, it's his changeup.
I mean, that's a pretty good changeup right there, and it was an easy take for him.
I didn't even try. I just knew it. And now we're playing chess. He knows he can't beat me inside.
Experience has taught me that he's probably looking in. Back then, I didn't know it.
And most of the time, I was always waiting for that 92 in back over the plate so I could catch him. And I'm just praying for it.
Bonds hits one high to right field and deep.
And there it goes. Can't come in the well twice, buddy. You just can't do it. And Greg knows, because I always have this saying, you cannot come in a penthouse without an invite.
I mean, that's a good pitch, believe it or not. It's an executed pitch, but obviously it's the wrong pitch to throw. That's one you got to put in the memory bank and try not to ever throw it right there again to him. I mean, he's the best in baseball, and you can't make it easy for him. That's the pitch he wants to hit. So you have to make him hit something other than that.
I really loved when Barry Bonds says, and now we're playing chess. That's the part when you watch at bats, Mike, and I've been very fortunate over the last few years to be able to hear you talk about sequencing and why you're doing things while you're pitching. It made it so much more fun to watch the Rangers pitching and the Rangers hitting during the World Series run, because I had an idea of what they were trying to do. And now hearing those two guys, masters at what they did, talking about facing each other, just kind of, I got chills right now just thinking about that.
Look, I'm not Greg Maddux at all, but he's a genius at this. And he made a mistake there. He talks about, look, I threw the pitch exactly how I wanted, with the break I wanted, location that I wanted, but
it was the wrong pitch.
It's the wrong pitch. That's what Barry wanted. I messed up. Through experience, I knew not to do that. That was okay. I lost this battle in this at bat, and now put it in the memory bank, and now I have to do different sequences. If I'm going to go cutter in, change up away, I'm not going to go back to cutter in. And it's interesting, I was watching Mariano Rivera to explain his cutter on video this morning, and it just goes to this, because we do this, and I've said this to Dave Raymond on the air before doing a game. I'm like, we have this, it's a sinker, it's a two-seamer, it's a four-seamer. They're all fastballs. Give me a break. Like with this, like they throw seven different pitches. My rear end, like a fastball is somewhat a fastball. You know, I threw four-seam and two-seam too. It was a fastball. There was a hair different movement to it, but it wasn't crazy. But we just throw cutter as like, cutter, one pitch, and Mariano Rivera is like, very few people throw a cutter today. They're throwing sliders, they're calling cutters. Because it's like, I'm like, we need to do, if we're going to do this with fastball, it's a four-seam, it's a two-seam, it's a sinker, three different fastballs. Well, on a cutter, is it a cut fastball or is it a cut slider?
Right.
And Mariano Rivera backs me up on this. He says, most people that throw cutters today are not throwing cutters. They are throwing sliders. They're throwing hard sliders that somehow have now gone into the category of cutters. It used to be a cut fastball. The reason it's called a cutter is you're throwing a fastball that cuts instead of sinks, or instead of stays straight. It's not a cutter breaking ball. It's always been a cut fastball, but we've changed the definition of it a little bit, a lot. And now we're misrepresenting what a cutter actually is. But now getting back to Maddux and getting back to Barry Bonds is, you're always doing this. You're always trying to read the hitter. You have a scouting report and you're pitching to that report, and your catcher's helping you out a lot with that. Usually you have a catcher that you went through all of the game plan against each batter individually. As a starting pitcher, you sit down with the pitching coach. about 45 minutes before the game, and you individually go through each scouting report against hitter one, and then hitter two, and then hitter three. You're not going up. You're not talking about the bench. It's enough to remember nine. If you're a guy like Maddox, you're going to know because you've been in the league a while. Maybe a random dude comes up who's a rookie, and you're a little bit confused, so you're going to go to more your strengths and what you think his weaknesses are going to be. Greg Maddox has talked about, hey, where their hands are, how big they are, different things. But he's like, I can pitch to guys even if I have no scouting report because I can look at them and have a great idea the way they stand in the box, the way their hands are, on how I'm going to attack that guy, even if I have zero scouting report on a guy who just got called up.
You told me this morning that Maddox, when he walks off the mound, like he knows everything that he did on the mound.
Yeah, he'll know. He doesn't have to look at the board and see how many pitches he threw. He's keeping a count in his head. And then he's not saying how many strikes have I thrown. He's saying how many pitches have I executed. So he'll come off the mound and he would go to Bobby Cox or Tom Glavine, John Smoltz, Leo Mazzoni was his pitching coach there. And he'd just go 73 and 91. Just like he said, that was an executed pitch. So in that at bat, he was 3-for-3 in executing the pitch he wanted. It didn't mean he was successful with the pitch. The result, he left out. That's for later. He could, in his brain, for the whole game, which maybe this is why he's your favorite, is he was keeping a count in his brain of pitches total and executed pitches. So he knew how many pitches he executed in his game. Sometimes it ended up being a negative result. Sometimes he wouldn't execute a pitch and it would be a positive result. But he was like, that doesn't matter. Did I do exactly what I wanted to do when I made the pitch? Did I execute the pitch? The result,
it was the sequencing or the pitch that I chose, but not the execution of it.
And this is, I was talking about this
with
football.
That's a different level than just regular pitcher. I mean, all those pitchers are coming off not thinking on that high level.
And I had somebody ask me this, and I thought it's a valid point because they're like, Mike, I'll bring this up because I sometimes do this. I fall into this category listening to somebody else talk another sport that they didn't play. And you're like, what do you know? Because they're like, hey, how do you do football? How, like, aren't you kind of embarrassed to talk football a little bit? This is at the Dallas Card Show because I'm such a baseball guy. And I'm like, I get it. And I'm not trying to knock you guys at all, but I'm like, Corey played high school football. Kevin didn't play high school football. I didn't play high school football. But I get it. If we have Jesse Holly up here or we
different
have
stuff,
Patrick Creighton or who, like, it's different. Like, they played in the NFL. Or if you even get a dude who played, like, at North Texas for 4 years. Yeah. Now, they're not going to play in the NFL, but they're going to know more because they went through a whole four-year college program. So they're going to know a little bit more than us. That is what it is. But I'm like, I know football on a base level, but I don't know it on an NFL former player level. But I do know this. When people complain about an offensive coordinator, why the hell would you run the ball there for 2 yards to the right side? Yeah. Well, I understand this because of pitching. I'm my own coordinator. And sometimes you make a pitch because you need to see how they react to this pitch to base on what you're going to do the next pitch, what you're going to do the next at bat to them. So a lot of times when people complain as we get to football season about an offensive coordinator, or I guess a defensive coordinator, sometimes they're doing things and they're not trying to get 10 yards every play, even though you'd love for them to just be first and 10 every play. I love my guy, Jeff Kavanaugh. He's my buddy and everything. But sometimes he gets really ticked off. Like, why would you ever do that? And it's like, dude, sometimes you have to do that to set up something else later, even though it ends up being in your book or in analytics a negative play or a stupid play. Sometimes you have to do that to set up something later, and the offensive coordinator is not going to let you know, hey, you know, in the first quarter on our seventh play of the game when I ran the ball for 2 yards to the right side, do you know in the third quarter with 3 minutes to go in a big situation, I ran the same set, the same look and everything, and then did something totally different off of it that you guys aren't going to remember or even recognize because it's 40 plays later in the game. But that one play set this up for a 17-yard game that I knew that I needed. And sometimes in the first inning, not as much anymore, but sometimes in the first inning, I do this. So in the sixth inning, when I'm facing him again, he's thinking I'm going to go back to that same sequence. And instead of on 1-1 throwing the changeup down in the way, I throw a cutter in on his hands. And he's like, you haven't done that to me all game in that situation. And now you got me.
Yeah, and sometimes also when you call that play on offense, the execution is poor.
Yeah.
And never forget, just like we saw with Barry Bonds, there's another person on the other side trying to make sure that they got their own plan. Yep. And maybe they have, they'd never come in at me with a 92 mile an hour fastball because that's what I'm looking for.
And you know what stinks is sometimes they get in your head and they're not even in your head. And what I mean by that is you're like, dude, if I do this, he's Barry Bonds or he's whatever. He's thinking this. And then you go to your weakness.
Yeah.
You know, because you're, and then you're like, well, my weakness can't get him out either. I might as well stick with what I know. And I think that this is a perfect example, as I got to go now, is Sean McVay in the Super Bowl. He's like, I got so nervous facing Bill Belichick that I couldn't even put together the game plan for us to possibly be successful. Because every time I thought this could work, well, doesn't Bill know that this is going to work? So I better not. Right. And so that's the tough part about either being a coordinator or at times being a pitcher hitter. And that's what I love about baseball is most of these guys are thinking Josh Hamilton, great career when he was healthy and everything. He wasn't thinking at the plate, and that's what makes him great is he never had those thoughts. He's just C-ball, hit-ball. So, there you go.
Great stuff, Mike.
Absolutely. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next.
Go get Rangers. Go get Rangers, baby.
It's time for the C-Block starring Corey Majors.
Oh, my gosh. This breakout player, and is this dude a hero to all gamers out there? Next on The Fan.